Coming up next, from the movie The Great Dictator, Charlie Chaplin does the closing address.
I'm sorry, but I don't want to be an emperor. That's not my business. I don't want to rule or conquer anyone. I should like to help everyone if possible. Jew, Gentile, black man, white. We all want to help one another. Human beings are like that. We want to live by each other's happiness, not by each other's misery. We don't want to hate and despise one another. In this world, there's room for everyone, and the good earth is rich and can provide for everyone. The way of life can be free and beautiful, but we have lost the way. Greed has poisoned men's souls, has barricaded the world with hate, has goose-stepped us into misery and bloodshed. We have developed speed, but we have shut ourselves in. Machinery that gives abundance has left us in want. Our knowledge has made us cynical, our cleverness hard and unkind. We think too much and feel too little. More than machinery, we need humanity. More than cleverness, we need kindness and gentleness. Without these qualities, life will be violent, and all will be lost. The aeroplane and the radio have brought us closer together. The very nature of these inventions cries out for the goodness in men, cries out for universal brotherhood, for the unity of us all. Even now, my voice is reaching millions throughout the world, millions of despairing men, women, and little children, victims of a system that makes men torture and imprison innocent people. To those who can hear me, I say, do not despair. The misery that is now upon us is but the passing of greed, the bitterness of men who fear the way of human progress. The hate of men will pass, and dictators die. And the power they took from the people will return to the people. And so long as men die, liberty will never perish. Soldiers, don't give yourselves to brutes. Men who despise you, enslave you, who regiment your lives, tell you what to do, what to think, and what to feel, who drill you, diet you, treat you like cattle, use you as cannon fodder. Don't give yourselves to these unnatural men, machine men with machine minds and machine hearts. You are not machines. You are not cattle. You are men. You have the love of humanity in your hearts. You don't hate, only the unloved hate, the unloved and the unnatural. Soldiers, don't fight for slavery. Fight for liberty. In the 17th chapter of St. Luke, it is written, the kingdom of God is within man, not one man nor a group of men, but in all men, in you. You, the people, have the power to create machines, the power to create happiness. You, the people, have the power to make this life free and beautiful, to make this life a wonderful adventure. Then in the name of democracy, let us use that power. Let us all unite. Let us fight for a new world, a decent world, that will give men a chance to work, that will give youth a future and old age a security. By the promise of these things, brutes have risen to power, but they lie. They do not fulfill that promise. They never will. Dictators free themselves, but they enslave the people. Now let us fight to fulfill that promise. Let us fight to free the world, to do away with national barriers, to do away with greed, with hate and intolerance. Let us fight for a world of reason. A world where science and progress will lead to all men's happiness. Soldiers, in the name of democracy, let us all unite! Hannah, can you hear me? Wherever you are, look up, Hannah. The clouds are lifting. The sun is breaking through. We are coming out of the darkness into the light. We are coming into a new world, a kindlier world, where men will rise above their hate, their greed, and brutality. Look up, Hannah. The soul of man has been given wings, and at last he is beginning to fly. He is flying into the rainbow, into the light of hope, into the future, the glorious future that belongs to you, to me, and to all of us. Look up, Hannah. Look up.
Thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. If you're just joining us, we're listening to the debate of whether Snowden was justified in his release of highly classified national security documents.
Our motion is Snowden was justified. And here to make his argument against this motion, our final speaker in the opening round, Andrew McCarthy. He's a contributing editor to the National Review and a former federal prosecutor. Ladies and gentlemen, Andrew McCarthy.
Let me jump right in. Notice that Mr. Ellsberg mentioned that he removed he said somewhere between 4,000 and 7,000 documents, and that was what was put out. Snowden has released 1.7 million documents. He couldn't conceivably have known what was in the documents at the time of purloining them and putting them out. We're talking about a massively different leak, and one that's been massively damaging to the United States. John mentioned that this is my second rodeo at Intelligence Squared. When I was here the last time, the question was whether we needed to have more surveillance to prevent terrorist attacks. It was interesting. The audience was of a mind that, you know, we absolutely did need more surveillance. They recognized we had serious enemies of the United States who wanted to mass murder Americans. But something made them uncomfortable. And when we got to talk to them afterwards, I got to find out what the something was. George Bush. Not George Bush the person, but the concept that so much power was reposed in one individual, that one person could be able to order warrantless surveillance, this idea that we don't have enough checks and balances, we don't have enough legislative buy-in, we don't have enough judicial oversight. It's interesting because what President Bush was trying to impose on this sort of new kind of war was old rules of war. And they were probably best explained in 1948, at least the reason for them, by Robert Jackson, Nuremberg prosecutor, Supreme Court justice, FDR's attorney general. In a 1948 case called Chicago and Southern Airlines versus Waterman, he explained why national security had to be an executive responsibility. And the primary reason was, in a free democracy, the framers thought the most important decisions we make are the decisions about our national security. And they need to be made by elected officials who answer to the people whose lives are at stake. And when you transfer that responsibility over to courts, you take it from the accountable public officials to public officials who are purposely insulated from politics and who you can't get rid of when they get it wrong. Well, we've spent about a half century now experimenting with how far we can afford to depart from the vision of the framers. But here's the interesting thing. We did get to a place where we came together, and even if everybody was not satisfied with the outcome, we did strike a balance. We established laws which took away a lot of the president's unilateral power, forced the president to go to judges in order to get surveillance authority, institutionalized rigorous congressional oversight. In fact, most of what we know about abuses at the NSA actually comes from self-reporting, whether it's self-reporting to courts or self-reporting to Congress. But here's the thing. We actually set up this system with exactly the checks and balances that were at issue during the Bush days, the bad old Bush days when too much power was reposed in one person. And now where are we with Edward Snowden? We're right back to one person who decides what American secrets get kept and what gets exposed. And that person's not the president anymore. That person is a person who had access to this information because he violated his oath. The last time I was here, the audience told me that could never, ever be justified.
Thank you, Andrew McCarthy. And that concludes round one of this Intelligence Squared U.S. debate, where our motion is Snowden was justified. Now on to round two. In round two, the debaters address one another directly and take questions from me and from you in the audience. Our motion is this: Snowden was justified. Arguing for the motion, we've heard from Daniel Ellsberg and Ben Wisner. They have argued that the reaction itself to the revelations, the spasm of reform happening in Washington now, indicates that something was wrong, that there was something to blow the whistle on. And at bottom, there was no other way for Edward Snowden to do what he wanted to do. And by the way, he didn't set out to spy for our enemies. The team arguing against the motion, James Woolsey and Andrew McCarthy, say nothing justifies what Edward Snowden has done to the United States, that in fact he has caused serious harm to America's security. They say a sign of the irresponsibility of what he did is the sheer number of documents that he released. He could not possibly have known himself what was in all of them. And that, by the way, the internal system does work. Oversight, carefully negotiated and worked out for years, is functioning as well as it can. I want to put first to the side that's arguing against this motion this question of as to whether what Snowden revealed, to the degree that we know it, was in any way, say, whistle-worthy. Anything wrong with those programs? Did they need to be exposed in the first place? Andrew McCarthy.
Well, it's interesting. One of the last times that FBI Director Mueller testified before Congress, He was asked by our congressman here in New York, Jerry Nadler, what the big deal was about this, because as far as the metadata was concerned, he said, we know all about this. We heard about bulk collections back in 2006. USA Today had put an article out back then. The broad outlines of this were known. So in terms of the program that is most controversial, there's no question that what Snowden has revealed has filled out some details that we didn't know about, and certainly the breadth of what's been collected makes you blanch when you hear it. But in principle, that part of the revelation has been known for a long period of time.
So, Andrew, just to focus on the question, I hear where you're going with this, but to the basic question of whether there was really anything whistleblow-worthy, you're not concerned by what he revealed as being in violation of the Constitution, which is his argument.
That's two different things. It's not that I'm not concerned. Congress is concerned. That's why there'll probably be some modifications of the law. Was it whistleblower-worthy? No.
Okay, let me go to Ben Wisner, please, on the other side. Your response.
Well, I've been following this issue very closely, to say the least, over the last 10 years or more. I did not know until The Guardian published the document that the NSA, which is a foreign intelligence agency, was on a daily basis collecting the phone records of almost every American. Someone else who didn't know, or says he didn't know, is Republican Representative Jim Sensenbrenner, who is one of the principal authors of the Patriot Act, who says that he didn't know until this document was published that Section 215 of the Patriot Act was being used in this way. Whether, again, that's true or not isn't important to my argument. Either way, Congress didn't do anything about it. As soon as the public was read into this debate, we're now seeing open federal courts debate the constitutionality of this, and we're seeing Congress threaten not to reauthorize this unless the administration will agree to reforms.
James Woolsey.
There's much of the controversy here involves metadata, which lets the executive branch, lets them see and keep a record of what is on the outside of an envelope, let's say in first-class mail, the address, the return address, and the postmark. That's been approved by the courts for a long time. What has changed here is not that the federal government has gone away from a reasonable policy. It was, and I think it still is. What's changed is now we are talking about emails and telephone calls in the gazillions, but you still do not hear of substantial malfeasance using simply the metadata.
So, James Woolsey, you're saying there really was no, the alarm did not need to be rung.
Where alarms need to be rung, they should be discussed, and sometimes it's important. I stood behind at the time, and I stand behind Daniel Ellsberg now. He was dealing with policy issues and major lies that had come at us from the executive branch, and he did a courageous job, defended himself in court. But what Daniel Ellsberg did, I think, deserved a whistleblowing. What happens when metadata goes as a result of the development of electronics from one instrumentality to another doesn't change the fact that metadata is just metadata.
All right,
hear great speeches and interviews at Access Sacramento every Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. or go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
I have cherished the ideal of a democratic and free society in which all persons live together in harmony and with equal opportunities. It is an ideal which I hope to live for and to achieve. But if needs be, it is an ideal for which I am prepared to die.
Dragon, fire and burn the world.
You're gonna start this revolution.
Which we seek after, oh, the Congress.
And now, back to the debate. Was Snowden justified?
Let me bring in Daniel Ellsberg. It's always dangerous when your opponent starts to compliment you. It's a very tricky move.
Thank you. No, I appreciate that.
His point being, you had something to blow a whistle about. Edward Snowden does not. That the Snowden revelations don't reveal anything that suggested that that a whistleblowing was needed.
Let me address that. They revealed, of course, and it's the only way we know, that Clapper, Director of National Intelligence Clapper, gave a false statement. We know it from Snowden. Now, the point here is that Congress has been willing to deceive the public along with the NSA and the president, and that's the problem that Snowden revealed. And I want to make a specific point here that was raised earlier on this metadata. Why are we talking only about metadata entirely here? First of all, there's a lot of text messages that are not metadata, 200 million a day that get brought up. But what makes us believe that we were not collecting, recording for later retrieval all the content? And the answer is the president and the others keep saying, we don't do it. Why should we believe them?
Mr. McCarthy, why should we believe them?
Because we now have a system where there's oversight by Congress and oversight by the courts. And that has shown time and time again where they have either exceeded their authority or they have gone beyond what the legal precedent.
How did we hear that? We heard it from Snowden's documents that came out.
No,
we saw opinions of the Fisk Court, the federal court,
and we
that had not been made public.
Right, and from the opinions of the Fisk Court, what we see is that there's a give and take between the Fisk Court and the executive branch, which there never was before the 1970s, where they actually have to narrow the request that they make, go back to their desks and rewrite the request
that they made. We can actually say how many times. Out of 13,000 requests for warrants, 11 had to be modified or refused.
I want to move on to this point of whether he had another way to, if he had this conviction that something was wrong, what would he do internally? What's there for him?
Okay, right.
Why did he have no other way?
Okay, fine. I'm glad to have the chance to address that. Actually, the president and others, many others, have spoken about there was a better way. The way it was done was sensational, more heat than light. There were better ways to do that. I think that's clearly wrong. I really question whether the president is so misinformed about the situation as actually to believe that. There were four NSA high officials, senior officials. I'll name them Kurt Wiebe, Ed Loomis, Bill Binney, and Thomas Drake, who have among them an average of 30 years in the NSA. One is 28, another is 32. Who left the NSA because it conflicted with their conscience, eventually. They left it because it conflicted with the Constitution. They had tested the proposition that there are other ways to do it in every possible way. They had complained to their superiors that the then warrantless surveillance that was going on since 9/11 was unconstitutional, was a violation of the Fourth Amendment.
What was the constitutional violation?
The Fourth Amendment. They went to the Inspector Generals of NSA and of the DIB. They went to congressional staff and asked to testify. They asked to testify in open court under oath. They got nowhere. Every one of them was subject wrongly to an FBI raid, which took their computers without charging them ever with anything. They have each said, in contrast, without endorsing everything that Snowden has said, they have said the path he used was the only way to do what they had tried to do, was to bring this to the attention of Congress and the public, and that there was no other way to do it.
About the earth, really talk about survival. We could talk about the poles where the cold is unrivaled. The Arctic top of the world got people and polar bears. Antarctica, crazy penguins chilling down there on miles and miles of ice and glaciers. But something ain't straight with our polar neighbors. It's a change in the climate, a change in the weather. It's heating up now, but it's not for the better. See, the heat comes down from the sun to the earth, but now the heat can't escape, it just can't disperse because of carbon dioxide from power plants and factories, causing trucks so much more than you could find naturally. So the poles get warm and the earth gets hotter. All that necessary ice melts down into water. And the impact, the sad fact, is it can only escalate. So for real, we gotta act now before it's too late.
Take aim at climate change.
You gotta take aim, y'all.
Take aim at climate change.
Take
aim at climate change. Take aim at climate change.
Man, why should I care what's going on?
See, that's the catch? It's not all that obvious, but changes in the north and south are gonna affect all of us. That's why we got polar adventurers. Measure the thickness of the ice and checking the Earth's temperatures. We're life, that ice is the Earth's refrigerator. But when it starts to melt, it will be felt at the equator. Peep, when glaciers melt, the oceans start swelling. And then they flood the coast where the people be dwelling. You can say peace to Florida, New York, and California, all drowning in the ocean.
Don't say we didn't warn you.
And all these catastrophes become our new realities, coming down on the world just like the sword of Damocles.
Take aim at climate change.
Gotta all work together.
Take aim at climate change. Take aim at climate change.
Gotta all work together.
Take aim at climate change.
Okay, I get it, but give me some credit. So the world needs rescue. What can I do?
Just one small positive act and then another, and then add them all together, one after the other. Come on, you know the drill. It's about conservation, using only what you need and making sure that you're not wasting. Lots of information can be found on the web, so educate your head and don't forget to let your knowledge spread.
Is that all?
Not even close, that's not the end of it. But a million small things can produce immense benefits. Any way you call it, there's no single way to solve it. We gotta have involvement before the earth becomes insolvent.
Adapt to a new situation. Innovate, use your imagination. Mitigate, we've got to try.
Discoveries and new questions to ask, cause we can figure out the future by examining the past. So we sail to the poles and sample the extremes and drill into the ice and discover what it means. So use that brain and make science a priority, and you can work on stopping global warming with authority. So act now, there's no time for games. It's time to take aim.
Mitigate, we've got to try to stop global warming. We've got to aim.
And now, messages from Access Sacramento.